What is it exactly that makes home birth safe? What supports these elements of a smooth hormonal cascade that's going on in our brain? Inherently, we are animals. Whether you like that or not, what are we? We're mammals, okay? We give birth vaginally and we feed our babies with our breasts. Well, most of the time, the transfers, you guys, are non-emergent things. Sometimes women have the erroneous idea that the second they have a contraction, they're gonna call their midwife. Their midwife's gonna be there the whole time. No. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share our natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And this is now part two of the Home Birth 101 series. It's a two-part series. In this episode, we're going to go more about the tips and tricks, different things to think about with building your team out and, you know, choosing a doula, preparing your partner, taking birth classes, the different things to have at your house. And then what about, you know, plans A, B, and C, or what if it doesn't work out for you, or some of the potential downsides that there are to home birth, maybe things that you hadn't considered yet. So be sure to listen to part one before listening to this one. And if you have, then you're ready. So let's go.
All right. We did a home birth 101, 101, part one last week, and there was so much goodness. Dr. Morgan had so many beautiful things to say. There was so much to teach and share that we decided to split it into two episodes. So this is part two, where we cover the second part of all of the things that she's going to be talking about, everything you need to know about home birth. So let's continue.
Yeah, I just wanted to not be rushed in talking about these last little parts. So here we go. We're just going to pick up from right where we left off. You definitely are going to need to listen to part one in order for any of this to make sense. So go ahead, pause, stop, listen to that, then come back to this one and continue. So like, what is it exactly that makes home birth safe, that's like contributing to all of these really amazing statistics? Well, inherently, it supports these elements of a smooth hormonal cascade that's going on in our brain. Inherently, we are animals. Whether you like that or not, whether that fits within your worldview or not, what are we? We're mammals, okay? We give birth vaginally and we feed our babies with our breasts. Like if we laid eggs, there we'd be doing something different. If we did, you know, like we don't. And so mammalian brains across the board, surveying all other animals in the world, have a couple of things that they need or that you see in nature that they do. And often it's a dark, quiet, safe place. Or sometimes they'll go off alone. They are respected and supported, and there's no imminent threats around them. And if there is imminent threats, their labor will stop. They will climb a tree or get away or whatever until they feel safe again. I mean, this is not rocket science. I know. And we put women in these situations that are brightly lit. There's beeping sounds. There's new people coming in all the time of shift changes you've never met before, and they're constantly poking and prodding you. They're sometimes talking to you in the middle of a contraction. I'm not trying to shit talk hospital birth. It is just a fact, okay? You can have a really good hospital birth if you have a really good doula and partner who are like interfacing with all of these different variables for you and taking care of them. But if you do not take care of them, the Joe Schmo average experience that you're going to get is exactly what I'm outlining, okay? They're going to be coming in. Hi, mama. They're going to try to be respectful, but they might be talking to you literally in the middle of a contraction.
Or waking you up out of sleep.
Waking you up out of sleep. Sorry, it's time for your next check. Like, we're going to just check your blood pressure. We're going to check your cervix. We're just going to see, okay, the doctor really, if you're not progressed again in another hour, then we're going to give you Pitocin. There's not like a conversation around it. It's also now you have stress and pressure on yourself that, oh my God, if I don't dilate another inch.
I don't perform.
Yeah, exactly. There's timelines. There's a less familiarity. This is something that actually makes me really mad, is the lack of transparency sometimes with OBs around them not actually being at your birth. And a lot of women go into birth and they're like, oh, well, I love my OB and I've been seeing him forever and he's going to be there, or she or whoever. And it's like, unless they are one of the few who makes staying sure that they are actually at their clients, their patients' births, they may not be there. Are you kidding me? They know they're not going to be there, or they know that the chances are like 30% because they might be on call. They might have a different shift. They have a different birth, but they don't ever explain that to the woman. So then here it's like, oh, well, where's my doctor? And they're like, oh, well, you're just seeing the doctor on staff tonight.
Yeah.
And everybody else is like, duh, like, didn't you know that? And the woman's going, Oh, okay. I don't know you though. Exactly. That's the point. Like, sad. I think that they should
know.
always be like, hey, I will prop this is the percentage actually that I am at my patients. You know, they have so many patients, you guys. It's not because they don't care. It's literally just the system is not set up for this. This is a
Right.
benefit of home or hospital, or sorry, home or home birth sometimes. But in home birth settings, often there's a big midwife group too. So you have to like know them all. In a home birth setting, sometimes there's like one or two, they'll work in tandem. So like maybe you have a 50% chance of, you know, either one of them. But that to me is a really sad thing because a lot of people are they give their like allegiance and their trust into one particular person, and then that person is not there
Yeah,
at the
and that's
birth.
inherently threatening and scary, especially if the energy of that person isn't great. Like, I know when I was in my hospital births, some of the practitioners and providers were great, and I'm really energetically sensitive. And I'd be like, oh, I feel so comfortable with you. And the others were like, oh my God, I would never choose for you to be around me, especially up in my business. You know, like, you, I don't like you. And nurses, too. Some of the nurses are so nice and they're so sweet. And then some are not that way, they are not nice. And it's like, why are you even here? What's happening?
Yeah, why did you choose this job? Sometimes the nurses, it's like you hate this. Why you hate women? Like inherently, you actually hate women, so why are you here? I don't understand.
It's so weird.
Okay, so like that's a big deal. We support all of those factors in the way that a home birth model and midwifery model of care is set up. So the huge base of the pyramid of just the way that it's set up is supportive of mammalian birth. We have to not discount that. Like just because we're smart humans, we drive our Teslas and we can do surgery, like this actually is the majority. Okay. Like, cool, you and your electric car, I don't care. If you don't give me a nice place to give birth, it's dark and quiet and supported and safe and respected, it's not gonna go well. Like, why are we shocked? I don't know. So another thing about it is again, like I was saying earlier, with these stats that I was outlining, what makes it safe is, yeah, that it was planned and that you have a skilled provider with you. So there's a couple of different kinds of midwives. Let me just go over them briefly. CNM, Certified Nurse Midwife. Those are women who've gone through nursing school first and then they go through a midwifery program. So they are nurses first, then they are midwives. CPM, Certified Professional Midwife, just go into a direct track of midwifery. LM, licensed midwife, is usually actually the same thing as a CPM. It's just a state licensure tag that they'll put on there. But they're usually the same. In some states, there's a little bit of differences between these different terms. You'll have to look at your state. Yeah, I mean, okay, that's it. LM, lay midwife, I guess. Or, okay, licensed midwife is LM, but then there is also this idea of a lay M or an LM that's a lay midwife or a traditional midwife, a TM. Those have some sort of like alternative training. They're not licensed, or maybe they chose not to get licensure through the state because they wanted more freedom to practice whatever they were doing. But it's less regulated. You're not going to have the protections if something does occur, etc. Okay, another thing is that you're an appropriate candidate. That's another important thing to make home birth safe. If everybody was just like willy-nilly, yeah, the stats would look different. If there was not like some rules around it, and that's the free birth movement goal is like, why do we have, or not goal, but I mean, it's like, that's why they're trying to get away from this because they're like, well, don't tell me what to do. Like, I want to have my own say and whatever. And it's like, okay, well, then you're assuming that risk too. But like the state and the profession, like, I mean, even you and I, as naturopaths, like, we have licensure regulations. And so even if I don't agree with them and they suck, it's like, you know, the 42-week rule. Or breach in twins. It's like, I think that there should be a situation where adults can have a conversation, come together. There can be a legally binding document that says, hey, I know that I'm 43 weeks pregnant with twins and I still want to birth at home with you. And I can sign something that says, I assume the risk that if my babies die or if I die, you are not responsible. I am hiring you. I want you. And I know the risks could be as severe as death. And so, but I'm a mature adult, you're a mature adult. You can sign something that says that you're not going to like sue me. I mean, I don't know why that would happen. And then they just move forward with that. And it's like, okay, then if something happens, there can be no legal pursuit done on that provider because they were protected. But that's not how it works, unfortunately. But it should, because then there could be so much more individualization for these situations, you know?
Agreed.
Okay, and then the last element of what makes home birth safe is that there is a plan for transfer of care should escalate and we need it. Okay. So like there's hospitals that we can go to, or the midwife has a backup, or, you know, there's some sort of a plan. Okay. So what actually happens in a home birth? This I'm going to be brief with. Basically, you're just going to start to go into labor one time, or maybe you do some medical natural induction like castor oil, stripping of membranes. Midwives can do all those things. You're pumping your breasts, you're doing nipple stimulation, whatever it is, maybe because you're up against the 42-week rule. Mm-hmm. At some point, usually in your early labor, you'll either be in contact with the midwife, or they may come and just like monitor you and check on you and just be like, okay, everything's good. But they will probably leave depending on what phase you're in. But early labor, especially as a first-time mom, can be like days. Okay. Yeah. Long time. And midwives cannot just sit there for days. They're not going to be there. So that is actually one thing I'm glad that I'm clarifying right now. Because sometimes women have the erroneous idea that the second they have a contraction, they're going to call their midwife. Their midwife's going to be there the whole time. No. Yeah. The midwives are the medical provider, and they do provide a lot of support, but that is why you have a doula, because a midwife can simply not be there with you for 36 hours. Mm-hmm. They will be there once you are in a good active labor pattern, and they still even then might come and go because you have hours and hours of work to do to labor mm-hmm. down, and they monitor the baby and then they leave, or they maybe leave students with you, or their birth partner backup person or whatever. It just depends on kind of how everything's progressing. Mm-hmm. That's very, very normal. And I think that does come to surprise people.
Yeah.
So having a doula so that you have somebody there, the doula is under the impression usually, you'll have to talk with her, but whenever you call her, she's there for the rest mm-hmm. of the time mm-hmm. and is there to support you and be all those things that you're wanting your midwife to be that she's not going to be. But you know, the doula won't check on your cervix or listen to the baby or anything, but the doula is just going to be there to emotionally support you, give you ideas for what to do, what to eat, positions, etc., help you with coping and different things like that. So then at some point you're going to become such a good active labor pattern that the midwife will come and stay until the baby's born. And then, you know, if there's emergencies, if there's some need for transfer, most of the time the transfers, you guys, are non-emergent things. They are like, mm-hmm. I'm too tired. So like the woman's just too tired. The labor has stalled and we need to go to the hospital and get some augmentation, get an epidural so she can relax, get an epidural so she can sleep. Back labor, baby's posterior. She's just over the pain. She needs some help. Like she needs a relief. Those are the most common causes of home birth transfer. Mm-hmm. And so usually it's like partners driving mom to the hospital. Yeah. It's totally chill. It's not an emergency. Once in a while, something's happening. We need to go emergency. We call an ambulance. That also happens. Mm-hmm. Also, there is sometimes postpartum transfers. So baby was born at home. Everything was great. And then now baby's lungs are kind of sounding a little iffy. We're getting a little worried. We maybe need some like neonatal antibiotics. We need some oxygen monitoring, NICU. Maybe mom's placenta stuck. We can't get it out. It's not working with manual extraction. We need the big guns. We need to go for a DNC or something like that. So there is always that option as well. The mm-hmm. newborn care that you'll receive at home wildly varies state to state. So check your state. But like here in Idaho, the team can bring to you like the hearing test and mm-hmm. screening materials. They can bring the cardio screening materials. And they are really, the midwives here can be your baby's like primary care physician provider for weeks. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to go outside of the home for that. But in California, when I gave birth to my first two babies, I had to go to the pediatrician within 3 days, 3 to 5 days of birth. And that sucks. That mm-hmm. sucks so bad, but it's still worth it to me. But it was like, goodness gracious, like scheduling that appointment, first of all, within mm-hmm. such a short window, and then going to it like so early postpartum. But you know, it was a requirement of my midwives. They were like, you will go see a pediatrician within a couple of days. So
yeah.
Some of the postpartum benefits of home birth is that you're going to see them, your midwives, way, way, way more. You're going to get a lot more postpartum care than in a lot of other settings most of the time. Some birth mm-hmm. centers though do have really robust postpartum care services, and like they may come to your house for some of that. you don't always have to go into the birth center. It just depends. But at a hospital, I mean, it's like, bye, like, see you. You'll see him again in a 6-week checkup. So those are some of the main differences. Now, okay, building your team, choosing your team. We kind of already talked about the differences between types of midwives. One thing I will say, if you're planning a home birth, is you get pregnant. Ideally, you've decided on this before you've gotten pregnant, because home birth midwives, depending on where you live, are sometimes a rarity, and people, they will fill up with repeat clients before you've even, like, you're like 6 weeks pregnant. You call them and they're like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I'm already booked up for September. And you're like, what? Like, how is that even possible? Mm-hmm. But they fill up with their repeat clients, because if you're like me, your midwife is the first person that you tell that you're pregnant, not even your husband, because you're like texting her and you're like, please tell me that you're taking birth this month, that this due date, because I want you so badly, you know? So don't wait. Don't pussyfoot around. I mean, even if you need to just get your midwife on board, and then if you're not completely fully committed to it, you can decide on that later. I mean, it's not like a great thing, because, you know, it does screw with their schedule. But, like, do not be 18 weeks pregnant and then going, oh, I think I want to have a home birth. Like, you're just, your chance, you obviously try, but your chances of finding somebody who's going to have that due date available is low.
Yeah.
Okay. Doula, like we said, absolutely 100%, without a doubt, recommend a doula for every single first time mom, at least. Okay. Mm-hmm. After that, if you don't feel like you need it, then fine, whatever. But this is like going to a psychedelic drug trip experience and having no one there that's sober.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. You need someone who's like, uh-huh, sweets. Mm-hmm. This is fine. You're doing great. You're having a good time. Oh, you puked. Okay. That's all right. Everything's okay. Okay. Yeah. Hold my hand. Okay. Just shh. Just go to sleep. Okay. Shh. It's all right. I got you. You need someone with that confidence who understands, who's gotten it, because if you have a male partner, or you have a female partner who's never given birth before, same thing. They don't know what's going on either. And they're watching you be uncomfortable, and it can be long, and they're just like, what is happening? Like, even if they've done a lot of birth training before, it's just such a nice thing to have somebody there, because again, the midwife might come and go from your house. They're going to check on you, and then hours later they'll come back, you know? Yep. Okay. One question I get all the time: how to get your partner on board? Well, I think men, if we're talking about a heterosexual relationship here, are very driven by safety and data. And so the whole first part of this podcast is going to relate to that in them. And you can show them those. We'll put the actual study that I was citing in the show notes too. And I think explaining the idea of you and where you feel comfortable as being a really big deal to the way that this is all going to go. Like, if you have a severe hospital phobia situation, you do not feel safe there, he may have his own worries and fears. And ultimately it's like, you are the one giving birth to this baby. He is not. And I don't like to be like, only you get to choose your woman, your body, screw him. We don't need men. Da, da, da. No, that's not what I'm saying. But I am saying, surely he can understand that logic too. Like,
well, relating it back to the mammals, that the safest thing is where I feel safest. So if you really don't feel safest at the hospital, and you are a low risk, that is probably the safer option. And just relaying it back to safety. Like, I think some people just think home birth, negligence, the end of the story, that's it. And you don't realize, oh, there's also risk to hospital, and there's risk to all of these interventions that can happen, and that they are more likely to happen if you are there and you're scared and you're not feeling safe.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, our friend Sophia Pavia just gave birth to her third? Yeah, and she said something so brilliant in that podcast, which was like, she was starting to say, I think, during the birth, like, I want to go to the hospital. Like, I'm done. I don't want to be here anymore. And her husband looked at her and was like, I can protect you here. I can provide for you, and I can be supportive here. If we go there, there's going to be a whole slew of things that start that I can't stop and I can't shield you from. And you're going to look to me at some point in that process, and you're going to be like, make this stop. And I'm going to be like, I can't. Yeah. So, and he was like, so, that's
like, so powerful.
Yeah. And so it, like, ultimately kept her to, you know, staying home and stuff, because she was like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. And I know that some people are just going to be shaking their head like, golly, the hospital's not that bad. And it's like, no, I get it. And you guys, it's not wrong. Like, what I just outlined is not wrong. That's actually the experience of so many women. Start asking. And if you think I'm wrong, like, okay, sorry, I don't know. We live in different realities, but I talk to women all day long that that's their experience, where it's like, yeah, and then like they just started this, and then they didn't really tell me. They just did that. They just did that. I was just talking to a labor and delivery nurse last week who was saying, you know, the postpartum Pitocin problem that just angers me to no end because they don't even tell the women that they're giving them Pitocin to deliver their placentas. It's just so routine in hospitals. And she was like, oh, yeah, we used to poke the needle. Like we'd have a needle of Pitocin ready to go, like a syringe. We used to poke it in the IV bag because they'd be hooked up and ready to go as soon as she's starting to push and stuff, and ready to go so that it, like, as soon as baby's out, boom, we just would stick it in there. We wouldn't ask her. We wouldn't tell her we're doing it. Nothing. And I'm just like, I can't even believe it. I can't believe that there would be no awareness. People don't find out about it until afterwards and they see their medical bill and they go, wait, I was given that? When? Why? You know, all that stuff. So getting your partner on board is ultimately like conversations between the two of you and figuring out what it is that he's afraid of, because it's a provider's or a partner's providing instinct to keep you safe and alive that sometimes can be misunderstood in the context of home birth. They're not understanding that it actually is maybe the safest place. And also, if you are black or brown, birthing outside of the hospital is very likely a better place for you to give birth. And that is an extremely sad reality that I even have to say that, but it is just so true. Black and brown women are 3 times more likely to die in childbirth than white women.
That's
And it's
crazy.
because they are literally ignored. They are told things like they'll complain about pain. They'll be like, something doesn't feel right. They're just gaslit and like ignored, and then now they're like hemorrhaging and nobody, they're bleeding internally, like no one listen. It's crazy. There's so many different situations where this happens, so just know that. Okay, cost and insurance. So it's really difficult. There are typical ranges of home birth, like in Idaho, I would say it's like between 38 and 4500 for home birth. And you know, 10 years ago when I gave birth to my first in California, it was about 5000. Now it's like about 10,000. It's pretty much doubled. It's a huge range, basically, state to state. And then if you have certain insurances, like Cigna does cover some home birth, there's probably others. Health shares sometimes will cover births completely, sometimes partially. Maybe like if you had an HSA or FSA, you can contribute those funds. So there's a lot of different ways to go about it. But I know that you particularly had hell of experience, ex still having a hell of experience with paying for your births. And is it because the health share wouldn't pay or what? As we're talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share an underrated tip with you. That tip is to continue taking your prenatal. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's life. Many women stop taking their prenatal after birth, but we recommend taking it for at least the first 9 months postpartum or the entirety of the time that you're breastfeeding. My favorite prenatal is Needed's Prenatal Multi, and it's the most robust formula that I've seen in the market. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, well above the bare minimum that a lot of prenatals settle for. Their quality standards are top tier with transparent third-party testing and over 10,000 practitioners now recommending the brand. And now we have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study that confirm the results of what we've been seeing clinically. Women who take the prenatal multi have significantly higher blood levels of critical nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum. This includes vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2. Only women in the Needed group reach the adequate, sufficient levels of vitamin D. Vitamin D plays a big role in your immune health, your mood, and your energy production, all things that are really important during your postpartum season. And while there's many different ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing to take your prenatal is a really simple, easy way to cover all your bases. It's one of the most impactful habits that we can have, and Needed makes it easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation for yourself. If you don't have insurance.
Home birth is very affordable.
That is such a crappy situation that has happened now. But okay, that is always, and I'll get that to that in the downside section, which is that something that can happen is that you plan a home birth and you still have to pay your home birth midwife, and then you go to the hospital.
Yeah. If you don't birth at home and you plan a home birth midwife, you still owe that money because they basically put their whole year aside. And the care that you get is so much more even than, you know, just going into for pregnancy checkup. So I appreciate it and stuff, but that is one thing that you need to know and budget for. And so don't be naive like me thinking and just assuming that you can have a home birth and that that's checked off. Make sure that you know what your current insurance health share situation is, what they cover, what your deductible is, all of that. Some hospitals are cheaper. Like the hospitals in California were much cheaper than the ones here. I do not know why. But
wow.
Like if you say I'm a cash paying patient, they'll sometimes give you a pretty big discount. And then that's just something to be aware of. Like if you have a health share, typically when you have a health share, you pay cash and then they reimburse you. But if you have traditional insurance, just making sure what you know, like what is going to happen. But yeah, one day we'll have traditional insurance. It's
just, yes, you will.
When you run your own business, it's a lot.
I'm glad though you said something about the prenatal care, and I haven't even touched on that. The prenatal care that you get from a home birth midwife is, you guys, your OBGYN will spend 7 to 15 minutes with you. And it's like, you know, once a month, and then it goes to every 2 weeks, and then it goes to once a week in the last final month of pregnancy. Your midwifery appointments that you have with your home birth midwife will probably be an hour at least each one. And so it's not even comparable. They're talking about who you are as a person, your fears. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? It's basically, they're like therapists. Okay. Like it's amazing. And they become your friends. They become part of your family. Like they include your kids. It's just a different vibe. So, I mean, I'm not going to go too far into that. So birth classes and prep, I mean, there's so many other things I need to talk about here, but I'm going to try to go quickly.
Hang on, Morgan. Do you want to just break this into two parts? Because, I mean, you can keep explaining and keep talking, and then we just break it into two, like two 45-minute segments or two, because it's like you've shared so much.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, we could. Let's do home birth one and two. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So just keep explaining at the depth that you want to. And then at the
end, we'll go back and do like an intro for part two.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Good idea. Okay. So birth classes and prep. This is a really important aspect of this. Like I touched on already in the beginning, there is a certain level of responsibility you assume and preparation that you're going to undertake to get your mindset right. Really, it's all about your mind and also having tools and also feeling confident. So some people are information people. I'm one of those people. Some people are not. And it's hard for me to like vibe with that and understand that, but I've just come to learn that that is the way that it is for some people. They don't really want to know. They want to just sort of be in the moment. So however it is for you, you still need to have some basics of understanding the birth process so that you're not shocked by it. Yeah. I love hypnobirthing. I love hypnobabies. The Bradley method is a good one. If you're like into the partner-led thing, if you really love art and or you have a lot of trauma and or you have a lot of like maybe just preconceived beliefs about birth, I think hypnobirthing would be good for that too. But there's a different birthing class style called birthing from within that can be really beautiful for that too. So there is a huge part as the pregnant woman going through this process of preparation where you need to like really get deep with yourself and address your fears. Like, what are your beliefs about birth? How are the way you were born? What about the way that the other women in your family were born? What about the birth stories that you've heard? What have you held on to? What have you internalized? What do you actually think? Do you actually think you can do it? Or are you just like putting on kind of a facade and hoping that you can do it? You know, like you got to get to the point where you actually think you can do it. Like you really, really, really do. And you feel really confident. You feel really excited. Ideally, you're feeling excited about it. And you're like, I can't wait to go on this human adventure, this human experience that only women get that is so amazing. It's bringing life into the world. And yeah, it's probably going to be kind of crazy and kind of intense. And I do think that this is where women who've done psychedelic drugs or had ulterior consciousness moments in their life, however that has happened, it serves them in birth because you've gone to a different place and you've come out the other side and seen that it was okay. Even if it was scary inside there, you're like, all right, like, but I'm okay. And you don't like trip out when you're in labor, but there's still an element that's similar where you aren't in control. It's sort of like you're you're drugged a little or something. You're not in control. You're at the whim of this experience. It's a train that's not going to stop until the baby comes out somehow, whether that's surgery or out of your vagina, but the baby's not coming out. Or sorry, it's not stopping until this baby comes out. And so you have to be able to like surrender into that very different reality.
Yeah.
And know that it's okay and like allow yourself to fall and feel really supported by the people around you. Now, preparing your partner, I think depending, I mean, if you have a male partner, again, videos. So like, you know, they can read all the books in the world. First of all, there's not that many good books. I will link a couple books. Mm-hmm. Listening to podcasts is helpful and watching videos. The videos aspect is to show them what's normal, like what is normal birth like. And we're showing them a mix of things. We are showing them beautiful, cinematic, birth photographer, white tub, twinkle lights. She's just gently moaning. We're showing them those. And we are showing them butthole up and close and personal and baby crowning, shit coming out of the baby's nose, meconiums everywhere. She's roaring her baby out. She's screaming. We're showing them all of the things, okay? The entire breadth of the experience needs to be understood deeply. It's a very visceral thing. Like, birth is not for the non-squeamish. And if your partner is a very squeamish person, okay, well, we're going to, you know, he can stay up by your head, or they, whoever they are, she can stay up by your head during like the actual crowning or something. But they still need to know what sounds you might make, that you might vomit, that you might cry, that you might tell them to fuck off and go away. Yep. And that that's okay. And that you don't, they don't hate you. This is just normal. Like, this is just birth. Okay. That like, that's just the way that it goes sometimes. And you may want to be completely alone. You may want to only be with your doula and for them not to take that personally. That they may be up for multiple days and not sleeping themselves and going, what the heck? Like, I am so tired. And I will say, as somebody who's given birth 4 times, but then been a doula probably like 15 times, it is really tiring being a doula and staying up overnight. Like, it's obviously, you guys, it's tiring being the laboring woman, but you're sort of like not here and it's a different thing. You have an altered perception of reality and everything. When you're just a lucid person who's the doula and you know that it's 2:30 in the morning and you're so far away still from this baby being born, and you're like, oh my God, I'm not going to sleep all night. It is a different level of tired. So I really feel for doulas, partners, anybody in the support system of birth, because it's like, wow, yeah, that does things. So they just need to know that. There's all of these different elements they need to know. I love YouTube for this reason. Just get on there, or Instagram birth accounts, and show them tons of stuff. And, you know, they really should be not like fighting you on that process. If they're fighting you, that's weird. Something needs to happen there, but they should be very much involved in this with you. If you take my pregnancy class, my 6-week pregnancy call, and if you didn't get in on like the, one of the ones before my paternity leave, cool. Or if you're listening to this in the future, whatever, I do have a lessons only version of the course that you can take anytime. It just does not include the 6 weeks of Q&A questions with me in the group, which I do think are highly valuable, but maybe like you're already too late. You know, you're like 35 weeks pregnant. You're like, crap, we need to do something or whatever, or I'm just not running a class right now. So that will link in the show notes. And it is it's a pregnancy health optimization plus birth class plus breastfeeding 101 and 102. And I say 102 because it goes through the troubleshooting of what to do if there's problems. It's not just, oh, here's normal lactation. It's also pathological lactation. And then it's the postpartum prep and planning class that you didn't know that you needed, right? So it's like, it's the whole shebang, and it really is pretty thorough. I think it is a really great option for people. Watch those lessons with your partner, like watch them together. You're doing it. Yeah. Your body is doing it, but you're in this together. And there can be such a sweetness around feeling supported by your partner during labor, and like they really have your back, and like seeing them step up in that kind of way and being like, I just love you so much, you know, and feeling that. So that's that. Okay. So now tools and tips, some things to think about. There's a lot of more things to think about here too, but these are just sort of like the ones that I would say the heavy hitter list. So you're going to get your list of things and items that you need to have from your midwife, of items you need to like buy, you know, Chucks pads, alcohol wipes, I don't know. It's like kind of random stuff sometimes. It's like a peri bottle,
They're
a
usually in a
little.
kit that they have you purchase.
Exactly. There's like a website that has it all together. You just like buy it. And it's a couple hundred bucks. Gosh, I'm hot. I'm taking off my sweater. And in addition to that, and this is kind of like, I mean, I could talk forever about this, but at the beginning of your labor, when you really start to have contractions, you are going to do a few things, ideally, depending on the situation. But ideally, you're going to eat a big meal and then you're going to rest. You're going to try to go to sleep or just at least lay down to rest, watch a movie, listen to a podcast, zone out, non-sleep, deep rest, like something like that. Okay. Because at some point, you will not be able to eat big meals anymore. If your early labor is, excuse me, if your early labor is days long, there might be multiple opportunities for you to do that, but probably you're going to get to the point after that big meal where you'll only be able to take small bites of things. So the things that you want to have in your house prepared and ready to go for your labor snacks and your food, here's some ideas. Okay, so like berries are really easy to eat in labor. Maybe bites of like shredded chicken. So there's like some protein or a bar, like a small protein bite bar thing, like a Go Macro bar piece. A perfect bar. Yeah, nut butter. You want to have drinks like electrolytes, coconut water. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Redmond Relight. Also, Redmond Relight contains calcium carbonate, which is the exact form that helps uterine contractions be very effective and strong. So it's your house. You have so many options. Like, I
Or
mean,
even like bone broth. I think I'm
yes.
like literally sipping on the Fawn bone broth right now, and I love it, and it's so good. And that's something that has protein and kind of has that savory nourishment. Because I know for me, sometimes people want sweet stuff, but sometimes I don't want sweet stuff when I'm in labor. I know it's like good because it's like calories, but if you're wanting something more savory, but you don't can't, I like the idea of meat would be weird. Bone broth is such a good option because you can sip it through a straw.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. Bone broth, coconut water, like you don't have to just drink plain water or electrolytes. It's a great way to get, and minerals too. There's minerals in bone broth, which is really good because you just need to replenish. Basically, between every contraction, you want to take a sip of something, and then every couple hours, you want to be having some kind of fuel. Okay, another thing that really helps with going alongside like beauty, human want and wish for beauty, but also the mammalian need of like dark and low lights and quiet and stuff is candles. So, I mean, it's your house. You could have real candles if you wanted to, but you can also just get those little LED flicker. Recovering from a cold, pregnant is just no fun. It takes a long time. But those little, like they're like a warm amber light, salt lamps, kind of twinkle lights. You know, you want to have light because you need to be able to see to move around. Your midwife maybe needs to see, especially if it's time for birth actually happening, to kind of monitor everything, witness what's going on. But you also want it to be very dark, cave-like, womby. I mean, we're really recreating. And if it's in the middle of the day, I get that that's harder to have happen. If the light is really bothering you, or if anything in your visuals is really bothering you, it's a great idea to have on hand. You may not use them. Some kind of an eye mask. There's a brand that's called the 40 Blinks. We'll put that in the show notes on Amazon. And it allows you to have your eyes open inside the mask and still not be able to see. Just in case, like, you know, I don't know, your eyelashes were getting annoyed or you didn't want to physically have your eyes closed. But you still can't see. It just gives you room. You may also want to have something like a comb. Like a wooden comb to squeeze. Sometimes people like to do that during contractions because the pain in their palm from squeezing the comb is a little bit distracting from the uterine contraction pain. My only thing with the comb is that you want to make sure your whole body isn't tensing up because you're doing that. And then we really want to be able to relax our whole body as much as we can around our tightening uterus. So if you're able to have like a pretty relaxed arm, where just your forearm is tensing, but your whole body isn't going along with it. Because, you know, a lot of people do that. They'll be like, ugh! And it's like, wait, wait, whoa, whoa. Like, you know, we have to know. And these are things that you would learn in your birth classes about the fear, tension, pain cycle. When we feel fear, even if you don't perceive it as fear, but if you're like worried, even just about the next contraction, because it's intense, that's fear. You tense up. And then when you tense up, your body feels more pain. When we are relaxed, we feel less. So, it's a mean, rude cycle because it's difficult to get on top of, to kind of get your bearings again, get your mind right around it. But it really is a big deal. Music, some kind of music is really great for most people. I tend to like music that does not have English words, can have words, but just not English, because I don't want to like hear it. I don't want to listen to it. And like, so maybe it's yoga music, they're singing in Sanskrit. Maybe it's just like drums or kind of like tribally or oming, like relaxation music you'd get at the massage place, like whatever. I think make a couple of different playlists. Electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms, too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more.
Yeah, I had different playlists with different energies based on what I wanted at the time, like the higher vibe, feminine power type playlist, and then the omi, like very alpha state, alpha brainwave state kind of feeling. And it's so nice. I even still listen to them now.
I know, I listen to them too. My last three bursts, I've listened to this one particular podcast, or not podcast, playlist, that I can share in the show notes if you make a note for me, please.
Okay, yep.
And it's a playlist from New Earth Mama on Instagram. I don't know if you follow her, but she's part of the Reconnected Parenting. I love her. She's so great. She has five beautiful children. And it's like the only thing I've listened to for my last three births. But I did make playlists for my first birth, and they are like my main two playlists. I have one that's kind of like soft and sweet, and then one that's called Groovin'. So any kind of like song that I like that's an upbeat song, I put into the Groovin'. Any kind of chill song, I put into soft and sweet, and that's just been the way it's been for 10 years. Okay, Rebozo, and if you have a doula, she would probably bring this with you. It's basically a long piece of fabric, but you can do so many things with it. They can like shake your butt muscles with it. It's called shaking the apples. Feels really good. They can hammock your belly. They can help using it to like help rotate the baby if they need to. Baby's not in like the perfect spot. You can pull on it during pushing. You can hang from it, like all sorts of stuff. A TENS machine. We don't really use those here in America, but in like Australia, they use TENS machines a lot. And it's basically like a little electromagnetic pulse thing that would go through these pads you'd place on your lower back, and it can again help to distract through the contraction pain. I don't think the TENS machines are like a huge help, but some women do really like them. And then
Really?
affirmations, like maybe you have visual affirmations near you, or even if it's just things to remind your team. Like I have never, not one time, been caught in a birth reading my own affirmations on the wall. They're beautiful. I like glance at them and I'm like, oh, that's like pretty, but I don't read the words. But I think that the people in the room, to be able to look at a little quick four-word sentence that says like, breathe in, or like focus on the exhales or something. Like that's one that for me that I really do actually like a lot. To focus on the exhale is like my mantra birth.
Well, and also if you have the affirmations up in your room before the birth happens and you are reading them during that time, then I feel like once you're in the room, you've read them so much that you kind of already go into that frequency and that energy. And so it's not like you've only seen them for the first time the day of birth.
Yes, thank you. And other people can kind of recite them back to you, remind you. And it's like just this energy. It's like there's these thoughts and this sort of frequency that's around. And I mean, I believe in that for sure. Okay, there's so many other things that we can have at home birth. But really, the idea is even if you have nothing, even if you're just in like a blank room, that is dark and warm. It's not cold. And you're with people that support you and love you, and you feel safe. That's the vibe we're going for. You need to remember you are like a monkey mom giving birth to your monkey baby.
Okay. Yeah. And the other thing you haven't mentioned on the podcast yet is a water tub, which is something.
Oh my God. Yes.
It is a big deal for some people, and some people don't end up doing it, but maybe you want to speak to that.
No. Oh my God. Thank you. Yes. And a ball, like a yoga ball to sit on. Different than just a chair, because you can like really move your hips in these big open circles. And you can also do something where you like put your chest on it. Your knees are on the ground, but like your chest is on the ball with your arms kind of up over it and your belly's hanging in a hammock. There's so many different moves that you can do with a ball, and it's really a great thing. And then a tub of some kind. Some people are like shower people, and you can get a lot of relief with water in a shower, especially if you have a moving shower head and you can like spray it directly on your belly or on your lower back. But the effect of getting in and submerging under, in not like your whole head underwater, but your body underwater, is so nice and so helpful. Like truly, I mean, the comb and the TENS machine, I mean, penny, like pebbles in comparison to the boulder of help that a tub is. And so getting into water at some point in your labor, whether it's just to like give birth to the baby right at the end, or the reverse, like you mentioned, you labor in it, but then you actually don't want to give birth in it, or you can't feel pushing, or you don't like it, or you're not allowed to, depending on where you are, whatever, you can get out and birth on land, like on a bed or something, or the floor. But having the option of getting in water, especially as we're getting closer to like transition, sometimes women are really starting to freak out. They need something to change. Like I really resonate with that feeling of like, okay, something has to change. I cannot keep with this. And that's a great, if you're not already in the water, it can be a very helpful thing to just be like, oh, okay, like it gives you a little bit of relief. You're like, I can cope. But also just having your team remind you, like, if you're feeling like you can't do it, you're just very close.
Yeah.
You're very, very close. Okay, so let's talk about like, what if it doesn't work out? We do have a whole transfer episode that, gosh, but it might not be out by the time this podcast comes out. We might need to rearrange that. Okay. Transfer rates are overall low. We discussed that there, but just remember the main thing is they're not emergent. Like when we think of home birth transfer, we're thinking of like in the hospital and it's scary and somebody's dying, and those things do happen, but they are not the vast majority of what's happening. The vast majority is the woman is tired. She needs pain relief. She's stalled out in her labor. She wants an epidural, those types of things.
Yeah.
So we always do need to have plans A, B, C, D, whatever. And I'm a big proponent of going through these kinds of things in your mind for the reason of just being prepared for it, but then also for the reason of risk or trauma mitigation, because you won't be so surprised. And there's an element of trauma in birth that is, for some people, almost mostly because of how shocking and surprised they were at what was happening, because they just didn't even know that it was a thing, or they'd never even thought about it. And then here they are, and they're just like, can't cope with the reality before them because they're like, what is going on? It's so outside of the plan. It's so outside of, they didn't even have a thought prior to this could happen, you know? So we don't want that, because it's just going to make the whole situation worse. Instead, we want you to be grounded in, this is my plan A. I'm going to do everything I can to do plan A. If plan A doesn't work, then this is my plan B. And in the moment, we're not going to grieve too much the differences between the two plans, because you literally won't have time. You can later on and process, and it is important to do that. And it is important to have your feelings. And it's also completely normal to have disappointment. I mean, lots of people that I know who have had home births still have birth trauma or birth disappointment, different things like that. Just because you did it where you wanted it to does not mean that it felt good, you know, in your body. So not felt good, but like integrated well into your being. And so we need to have the different plans. And part of that is packing or having a little hospital bag ready to go. And then it has a bunch of sheets of your birth plan in it. Because although it doesn't really feel that relevant in a home birth setting, because you're like, my midwife knows and whatever. If you do have to go somewhere else, you want to be able to maintain as much of those very well researched and intended choices that you've made specifically for this baby and this birth to be met where they can. And so you want to have your birth plan.
And we have a birth plan episode, so I'll put that on there as well.
Yes, we do.
A lot of things to refer.
Yeah, we have a lot of birth episodes. We should like conglomerate them all.
I actually did for a patient the other day. I was going to tell you about that. I like put it in order of how I thought she should listen, first trimester, second, third. And then I put it in my membership in that order for like,
oh my God, show me.
We should just make a course out of it, I think.
We should make a course out of it.
But it was great because I went through and pulled them all and I was like, this is the order I would listen to them and at this time of your pregnancy. So
that's so smart. Yeah, please. I want to see how you did that because I know that we have, I'm kind of forgetting. Like, yeah, what do we have this? Do we have that? I don't know.
No, maybe we should create a website page that's like organized like that. I don't know.
Yeah, by like who? Yeah, no, that's a great idea because then for your episodes, it could be like, starting way back when, like, okay, you're getting off birth control. Mm-hmm. Okay, hormones. Okay, fertility, infertility, preconception. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It could be a timeline. Okay, yeah. So you're going to print off lots of sheets. I'm talking like 10 sheets of your birth plan. You're going to have a small, modest hospital transfer bag. Again, it's usually not going to be an emergency, so you will have time to add things to it if you need to. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to have like a double extra phone charger and like a double extra toothbrush, but make a list though inside the bag, the backpack or whatever, of okay, grab these extra things mm-hmm. if we are actually leaving.
Yeah.
I know this sounds like a lot of prep, but it is. I mean, like it takes a lot of time, you know, and hopefully you're not going to have to use that. But if you do, you want it to be as like seamless and easy and not stressful as possible, especially because mm-hmm. you're probably going to be in very good active labor, not able to make these choices whatsoever.
Yeah.
And you still want to have your creature comforts when you get to the hospital if you need them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what are some of the potential downsides of having a home birth? So depending on your state, you may have to go to the pediatrician pretty soon, a couple days after birth. Mm-hmm. Some states, like I was saying here in Idaho, the midwives are the primary care provider for the baby for a certain period of time. Other states aren't. So that could be seen as a downside. Or you may have to go to the hospital for like other things like the hearing screening or the cardio, like other testing you maybe want to do. Maybe maybe your perineal tear is too great. It's outside of the realm of where the midwife feels comfortable. And she's like, actually, it'd be better for you to do this at the hospital, which I think that if I had a third or fourth degree tear, I would highly consider that. Yeah. It would be a pain in the ass. It would suck so bad. But I mean, it's like fairly important to get a really, really good stitching. So I don't know. And then the out of pocket, cost. If you transfer, it's like you're paying double.
Yep.
So those are really the only downsides that I could think of. Do you have anything you'd?
Just like if you have other kids, you have to find a solution for that. If you don't want your kids there because you kind of have to have like babysitters or support on call because you obviously don't know when that's going to happen. And or if you don't, knowing that that's a factor. I know you have your kids at your births. I honestly, if I had given the chance to have another birth, I don't know. You know how I am about noise. Like, I don't know if I could give birth in your house with your children.
Yeah, no, I get that.
I would be like so distracted, like even more so than at a hospital. But that's just me because I'm weird like that, you know, like little noises like really get to me. They just like, I feel them viscerally in my body. And so that is just another thing is you obviously have to handle them. If you are a first-time mom, that's not as big of a factor. But maybe if you have a dog, you know, just having those kind of things where you just have to think about it. Obviously, dogs are easier just to put outside or whatever. But just being aware of what's in your house that is already there that you won't be able to get away from, right? It's not like you're leaving all of that to go somewhere else. And in many ways, that's better, right? You have, if I had my little kitty, you know, giving birth at home, she'd be so sweet. Like, she would bring so much joy to me. But that's the only other thing I can think of just, or if people are staying with you, maybe if people have come to be near you for the birth, a mother, a mother-in-law, a cousin, a sister, whatever. And all of a sudden you're like, wait, I don't want you here, but you're staying at my house. That would be another factor to think about of being mindful and aware of, wow, now that I'm actually in labor, I don't really want you all here. And like, where would they go or what would they do? Or just if you feel that them being at your house is going to impact the birth, or maybe it is impacting it and you don't realize that. So we talk about that in the boundaries episode that I think just came out. But that would be the only other thing is because you're just dealing with the situation that's in your current home.
Yeah, no, thank you for saying that. I mean, dogs can be a problem because if they're like so riled up by the midwife and they have a hard time calming down about it, like you know your dogs, right? Like, so maybe they need to go somewhere else. Like, you,
Yeah, exactly.
oh, friend, neighbor, I'm starting to have early labor contractions. I'm going to bring my dog over now. It might be like 2 days, but please
Yeah.
watch my dog, or like parents
Especially
or
if you have like a
whatever.
barking dog that is like upset if it's outside, and it's upset if it's inside, and it's freaking out, and it's like you're all
Yes.
in your head of like, oh my God, you know, if anything that's going to get you out of labor land, whether
Yes.
it's children, a dog, a person who's staying with you know, a messy house, whatever, like doing all of the things to mitigate those things, I think will be important. You know, not maybe giving birth in your like office where you see your papers and you
Right,
know,
good point.
if you work from home or something, you know, just anything that's gonna like help you get out of whatever like land you're in.
Well, and one thing I do
Really
want to say too is that I think sometimes people have a fear that home birth is going to be really messy and it's going to like ruin their house. And I will say it is amazing how well contained the blood and the mess and everything is, and how fast, and you don't even know that it's happening, that the midwives clean everything up afterwards. So that is not a concern. Like, I've never heard of a situation of somebody who's disappointed because of something that, got ruined. They give you instructions about how to make your bed so that, like, if your water breaks or something, which could happen if you were planning a hospital birth too, like, you don't ruin your mattress. Like, that can happen no matter where you are. But like, yeah, if you have a white bedspread and you're giving birth on it without like a chucks pad underneath you or something, it's like, well, maybe you move or maybe you pull it
Yeah.
off. Like,
But
you can
even
do
still, blood
things.
comes out of most things.
Yes,
Blood
and
is
blood
like.
comes out. It's like you can do things to prevent that from happening, and also you can wash things, and it's just, that's not really an issue. So, anyways, thank you for coming to my two-part TED
Yeah,
talk.
you have one last note here that I want you to say.
Oh
The
yeah, I
overall.
just wanted to say that overall, I mean, I know I'm ending on this like potential downsides note, but I just wanted to say that it is my experience, and I know I'm biased because it's just the world that we're in of being in the natural kind of crunchy world and things, but where I've personally seen this situation so many times of women who have a hospital birth first and then they choose home with their second or third birth or something like that. And every single time the response is like, wow, why didn't we do that before? And why do we do that? I very rarely have encountered a situation where somebody was like, I did not like that. I did not want that. Unless they just very, very much really philosophically, like, they wanted the epidural. That's the only thing. That's like the only thing that really comes up is like, no, I do not want to give birth again without an epidural, so I'm not going to do it at home. I would love if I could do it like at home with an epidural, but the only place you can get that is at the hospital. So that's kind of the main delineator. But if like managing contraction pains is fine for you, I only ever hear really positive things about it usually. Yeah. So I just wanted to leave with that because I wanted to just end on a positive note. But again, it really just depends on you getting right with yourself, not doing something because it's trendy, not doing something because everybody else is doing it. Like, where do you actually feel safest? Like, if I was having twins, I'm going to the hospital. And I'm sure that my twins would be home, born at home, and it probably would be okay. But I actually don't feel comfortable with that, though. Like, when I think about that, and I know this is just, I'm pulling back in part one, but when I think about that, I have a lot of, well, what if this? Well, what if this? What if this? What if that? Which would be quelled if I was in the hospital. And so, knowing my brain, it would be better for me if I had twins to be in the hospital trying attempting a vaginal birth, probably in the OR, the operating room, because that's just like where they go and where they do it. And I would like wear my 40 blinks, and I would have my music, and I would be mentally blocking things out, and I'd be moaning and oming and doing as much as I could, and I'd be delaying interventions, and I'd be doing all the different stuff that I could. But I also think I would feel safest there. So, like, that's that. You have to get right with yourself. Like, where will you feel the best? So,
Yeah, I love
anyways,
that.
are you pregnant or you're trying to conceive and you're looking for reliable natural health information about how to have a healthy pregnancy and also prepare for the future steps in motherhood to come, like the birth, the breastfeeding, and the postpartum? Because I have got you. So, this is exactly the reason why I made the 6-week pregnancy call. And it's my most comprehensive resource. It's the thing that I absolutely love. I've poured my heart and soul into it. It's all of the things that I wish that every woman knew when they are entering motherhood. It's a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 class, and a postpartum planning course all in one. And normally I run it as a class with live Q&A calls, but now it's available in a content-only format so that you can purchase it at any time and start learning immediately. It's called the lessons-only format, and it is just only all of the video lessons that you'll get access to for forever. So log on to milkmedicine.com/lessons-only or check out the link in the show notes.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.